Hi, it's Alan Carrington again, and this time I'm in Adelaide, South Australia. And thanks to the magic of Skype, I'm actually talking to Ken Sparrow. And Ken and I met in the romantic place of San Antonio, Texas, in January. Ken, where are you now? And tell us what you do and what you're passionate about.
I am in the city of Philadelphia, or just outside of Philadelphia in the United States. And I am currently a senior strategist with the Regis Company. And what I find exciting, and what I've found exciting for the last almost 25 years, is computer-based simulation or experience-oriented learning and the application of being able to enable students to learn by doing.
Yeah, and that's how we met, actually, because thanks to you, man, and I really do appreciate it, the willingness to have me across into the conference. The thing that really captured my attention, of course, was the Immersive Learning University. Could you give us a quick word about that before we start talking about this amazing subject?
Yes, so the Immersive Learning University was an outcropping of some work that I was doing as an adjunct faculty at the University of Pennsylvania in the Graduate School of Education in a doctoral program for chief learning officers, in which I designed a module called Experience Design and Simulation Technology. And when I was with a company called NextLearn, which is very involved in scenario-based learning, we came together and I helped them to launch the Immersive Learning University, which is based on the premise that the challenge, as it were, that there is a lot of data out there, a lot of research, both primary and anecdotal, that speaks to the power of simulation for learning. Experiential learning is going to be one of the most powerful ways of achieving change, of achieving skill development throughout history. We've had apprenticeships was the way that people gained mastery of a skill, and we've lost that, and we seem to be focused on instruction rather than experience.
And of course, what was really exciting, of course, was that ILU has hosted the symposium conference where we met face to face. That was an amazing thing. It's going to happen again, right? It was in Texas in 2013. It's going to be on in 2014. Is this a question?
It will be in January. I believe it's going to be in Charleston, but pay close attention to the ILU.immersivelearningu.com to get details on the location.
I can't say how hard or easy it's going to be for me to get there. The conference itself was well worth it. The airfares, of course, are monumental, because we're on the other end of the earth, right? But listen, you've written a book, a booklet, and it's a booklet, we'll call it that, that the ASTD have published.
Yes.
What's it called?
It's called Scenario-Based E-Learning, and it's part of the InfoLine series that you can get access to at ASTD.org. In the publications section under InfoLine, and I believe you can sign in for a one-time access to it for free, but otherwise you need to sign in to purchase it from them.
We're going to follow some of the extracts or some of the methodology of that book in this. I hope we can do three podcasts, but we'll see how it all works out. I want to talk to you about what you see as being the advantages this book has got so much good stuff in it. The benefits is what I was looking for. The benefits of scenario-based learning. As you can see by the podcast episode before this one, I've been passionate about this thing for 9 years. Tell me, what are the benefits? Now, you've listed seven in the book, and I'm going to say them straight up front, then I want you to speak to them, if you would. They are a form of storytelling. They engage our emotions. They enable failing forward. That's cool. They promote critical thinking. They accelerate time. They provide shared context, and they trigger our emotions. Let's see if we can get through these in about 10 minutes. Ken, speak to this storytelling question. please.
Well, one of the key challenges of any, you know, in the learning space is going to be engagement. And if we don't have a motivated or engaged student, then you've got nothing. And so one of the key things that makes scenario-based applications so compelling is the fact that they are story-oriented and they are story-based. And there is no single element that is shared across the globe for all ages that is as compelling as a good story. And in fact, when you have a good story, you don't need anything else, as evidenced by Harry Potter or other books of that kind, where you had people of all ages around the globe who read these books. These were not short books, and people lined up for seven of them, and they would have continued reading them had she written more of them. And these are not videos. These are not movies. These are not video games. These are simply words on a page. And yet they are – and they're not read in 15-minute spurts. They were read and they were engaging, and so that just demonstrates the power of a good story. And so if we can utilize – if we can harness that kind of energy into our learning applications, then it gives us a whole lot of freedom to achieve the goals that we want.
Do you think educators today are good storytellers?
See, the fact is you don't need to be a good storyteller. If you look at what's on what's looked at as decent television these days, so much of it is reality television, and you know, so it's clear that reality sells. And you don't need to be a master storyteller to have an engaging application, because you can just tell it like it is. You can create a scenario of somebody's day in the life, an hour in the life, and they will find it compelling if it's delivered appropriately. So in terms of the any intimidation that one would feel about, oh my goodness, I have to write a Harry Potter story, well, you don't, because the fact is that if you can create something that seems like my life, I could be interested in it. And if you give me, if you challenge me with choices that are contextual, that are, that require me to think and that engage me from that standpoint, because I can see myself actually having to do that in real life, then you have an opportunity to engage me and to get me to actually get something out of the experience.
Okay. Now we've sort of morphed in, segued into engaging our emotions. Where does that fit? I mean,
right. Well, the second step from engagement. So once I've got an engaged learner, that's the first step. But then I need them to go through something that they'll actually remember. So I want them to have a good experience, but more importantly, I want them to be able to utilize that information when they face it in when they face that kind of situation in real life. So the recall, the retention is very important, and the ability to retrieve. And a lot of the research that's been out there that's been done on the brain and how we move things from short-term memory into long-term memory, one of the key items that has shown up in the research is emotional engagement. So when you are emotionally engaged in a situation or in content that is emotionally engaging, the chances of it moving from short-term to longer-term memory are going to be increased. And so if we can, in whatever the application is, if we can get you emotionally engaged, then we increase the chances that you'll actually retrieve, be able to retrieve this information when you need it. And so a story, you know, any kind of story, whether it, you can induce emotional engagement from a variety of ways, whether it's humor, whether it's stress, whether it's something that saddens you, whether it's something that excites you. So you can leverage a whole number of – I don't know if you remember during the conference, but I showed the picture of the mother-in-law.
I was just about to ask you about that. Yeah, yeah.
And even if I say it, I'm guessing that people who listen to this will have an immediate emotional reaction to mother-in-law just by just the term. And there is a chance that you may remember nothing else, but that mother-in-law came up somehow, and I can't figure out why, but you'll remember that.
Yeah.
And that's just a wonderful lever that can be pulled when we're developing these kinds of applications to get both maximize engagement, but also retention and retrieval.
Yeah, tremendous. And guys, whoever's listening, it's worth visiting the ASTD site, getting in there and just having a look at what the mother-in-law thinks. I'm not going to ask Ken to elaborate on that, but it's really cool. And everybody can relate to it. Now, this term failing forward, that's almost as cool as the mother-in-law scenario. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the things that...
Is that a common term in America, maybe?
It is not. I didn't make it up. I didn't realize it was only in America, but yeah, that is a concept that has been around for a bit.
Yeah, there was that movie about pass it forward
paying it forward.
I understood that one, but tell me about failing forward, because that's really, really interesting.
Well, very often you get into a situation in which, you know, and this just came out of some movies, right? Failure is not an option. Well, when you're playing an experience-oriented or scenario-based application, failure is an option. And in fact, failure is encouraged because you can, in essence, fail forward. You can use failing to learn from it so that it doesn't happen in real life. You can experience what happens when you do it wrong and experience the consequences, but it doesn't, you know, may hurt your ego a little bit, but otherwise it's something that you can use as a total learning experience and get feedback from the application so that you can understand contextually what was going on in that scenario that was wrong, and that you will learn, you know, you'll be smarter about it when you face that situation in real life or the next time even in the simulation. So it does give you an opportunity to, as part of the experience, to go through it in a way that allows you to fail, but in a positive way.
Yeah, we could spend a great deal of time on each one of these things, and we'll revisit them at another time. Okay, we've got failing, we've got emotions, we've got storytelling, and now we're talking about critical thinking. How does they promote critical thinking?
Well, one of the things that, you know, where simulation is, as much as it is a very good answer for many things, it may not be the answer for everything. There are still times when you need to teach. But the key areas in which this kind of application is going to be one of your better formats for delivering whatever messages you need to get across is in things that are contextual in nature, that there's no recipe to follow, that it's not something that you can just be, you know, follow the process and get it right. So what you need to do is to be able to think about what's going on in that scenario, understand what that context is, and then look at the choices that you can make and make the appropriate one. And so what it does is it provides an opportunity for the student or the player to actually have to exercise critical thinking or judgment in order to make a decision. And so the muscle memory that is created, hopefully, when one's going through this kind of application is going to be the thinking part, not necessarily what I did, because, again, we'll experience the consequences. I may have failed, but I did have to think about it first. And so that's what we want them to do when they're in another context, to think first.
Yeah, okay. Of course, as we both know, in our higher education world, that is one of the primary roles of a higher education, to develop critical thinking. Now, this leads into a sidebar, which we may not have a lot of time to elaborate. We haven't a lot of time to elaborate in this first episode. The question is, will these scenarios work for basically all discipline? I mean, your expertise and your success has been in the corporate place. And as well, but when it comes to the real hands-on skills like customer service and selling, it's a no-brainer. Scenarios are the best way to go. What about teaching philosophy?
Well, let me put it in the context of history, as I've given some thought to history. The philosophy is a little less applied. But if you were teaching history and wanted to give students an opportunity give them opportunity to experience history rather than be taught ancient Greece, one of the things that might be interesting is to put them through a scenario-based application in which they spend a day in the life as a member of the Republic. But what you can do within the scenario is not just have them kind of walking down the street and making decisions graphically or just in text, but you have a scorecard running in the background, which is the norms of the time. And there may be elements of how you accumulate wealth. There may be issues of what behaviors are appropriate or inappropriate. how you may have acted relative to the perception at the time in terms of your service of the gods. Whatever it may be, whatever lessons need to be provided for students to get a sense of what it was like at that time period, you could actually use scenario-based applications with the scorecard running in the background to challenge them to make decisions and make sure that, no, that's a 21st century issue. Actually, you need to be thinking about what it was like at the beginning of our calendar. You need to be thinking about earlier than in the BCE time frame, what it was like then, because their norms and what was appropriate then is totally not the same as it is now, and you could use scenario-based applications for that kind of learning as well.
Okay, a quick word about accelerate time.
One of the things, the challenges that we face in learning is that sometimes our actions or our behavior does not have an immediate consequence. We may do something to somebody, but we won't experience an immediate consequence. They will hold on to it maybe, and we'll get it back later, negative or positive. And so it's important that sometimes real life experience, we cannot make these connections. Simulation allows you to accelerate time, so I can enable the student to do an action and then experience that consequence in the time frame associated with their going through the application. So in a sim, a year may go by or a month may go by, so that I can now make that connection and through the feedback, but I can capture that time in a capsule so that you can experience both the action and the consequence within the same exercise,
right,
and make those connections.
Yeah, tremendous. And you talk about them, that they provide shared context.
Well, this goes back to a little bit of the storytelling. One of the things that we lose sight of is sometimes in the student experience is what they go through, that all we focus on is the student and their experience. And the reality is that especially nowadays with the advent of the social media and how much communication is going on it, we're constantly in communication with someone in a variety of ways. Now if I have somebody else who's gone through the same story as me, maybe they took a different path.
Even if it's fictitious, if it's a fictional.
Oh, absolutely.
Go on, back
because
to it,
now
yeah.
They'll actually have something that they can both relate to in the same way. So they may be in the same company but in different geographies, different parts of the world. So the behaviors, the kinds of people, the actual people, the situations may be different, but they will actually have a shared context in which they've gone through that same scenario. Now, they may have different interpretations of that scenario, but they'll know who the characters were. They'll know the situation, the customer, the scenario is about, and that will give them a common place to actually have further discussion that could be impactful to what it is that they do. So having this shared context allows for constructive communications.
There's a whole, almost a research project in that one alone. Let me ask you this question briefly, because we need to watch the time. But I think what you're saying is that if we use simulations for training, it will accelerate community building and it will improve morale.
It certainly can. Absolutely.
That is linking the training with morale is really, I mean, they do that a lot, but the truth of the matter is, from what you've just said, it could be, it might be, it's almost a PhD subject here, that by using scenarios, simulations, as the methodology by which you're training people in places, in communities, that you will in fact improve morale and accelerate bonding, if you want to call it that, or community development, relationship, communication.
Nothing happens on its own, but it's certainly, you create an environment in which those things are very manageable.
Okay, and the final one for the day is they trigger our memories.
Well, this goes back to the issue before on, I mentioned to you, the research on the brain. And the storytelling and the emotions, the emotional engagement, these are aspects of how, once we've got the engagement, how does experience work? So experience is going to evoke within our minds. So you know, when we face a scenario and we have to actually make a decision, somewhere in the back of our brains or in our subconscious even, we will sift through a portfolio of experience that we may have, and we'll try and glean from those experiences something related to the specific issue that we're facing. And that is, in essence, what informs our gut. When we have a gut reaction, that is where it's coming from. And so what we want to do is hopefully find a way to provide good experiences, you know, ones that had positive outcomes, at least from a learning perspective, that we can utilize to glean an appropriate response to whatever situation we're in. So what we want to do is use scenarios to populate, to actually create memories, or to tie to memories that may have been disjointed, and we may not have learning associated with. We don't understand why what happened, but this may give us some insight into that, and to combine those to have a more informed gut, as it were, so that we can make better decisions in the moment.
Yeah, Ken, thank you. I'm going to wrap up this episode because I want them to, you know, I want to keep them shorter and then do more of them, if I may impose again. I've been talking to Ken Sparrow, who's a senior strategist with the Regus Company in the United States, but he's also the energy behind Immersive Learning University, and of course I would almost confidently say this conference wouldn't have happened in January without you, Ken. Thank you for your time. Please allow me to revisit this, and it's been an education to talk to you, man.
I look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, okay, great.